It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. And our topic today is one of my favorites, long-distance cross-country ski racing. Monica wanted to call it competitive ski racing for muggles. And I think that's about right, because Nordic skiing is a great sport for non-athletes and truly long, lifelong activity that you don't have to give up as you get older. Although it provides a total workout, it doesn't put much strain on joints and muscles, and in the endurance events, middle-agers can do quite well. Our topic today is training for these distance races, including our famous Tour of Anchorage, not because you ever expect to win, but because you want to go the distance and share a big accomplishment with many friends and neighbors. And I have two coaches in the studio today who work with what we call masters. Masters is a synonym for old. It doesn't mean that you have to be a master, have mastered skiing. Greta Anderson is a former Tour of Anchorage winner and is the master's coach at APU. Thanks for being with us, Greta.
Thank you for having me.
And Sarah Miller is coach with the Alaska Nordic Masters program. Thanks for being here, Sarah.
Thank you.
So let's define masters. I mean, I remember thinking it a little intimidating when I first got involved, at the idea that masters meant that you had mastered something, but that's not really the point at all, is it, Sarah?
No, I think it's that you've reached a, you know, certain age and place in your life where you have the time and the desire to get out and either learn something new or perfect something that you used to do and then got busy with work or kids or family. So then you come back to it and just have a little bit more time to dedicate to a sport or hobby.
And it's sort of you're training with a group, you're trying to get better. You don't really have to be a great skier to get started, right?
Right, and that's the great thing about skiing and the groups in town. We have a number of groups in town that start with people that have never put skis on before to people that have, you know, like I said earlier, grew up skiing but maybe took a little bit of a break or never quite got the as competitive or, you know, the technique down that like they wanted to, so they come back to hone their skills.
Do you find that most people join your groups with a goal of something that they want to accomplish, or is it more just like, hey, let's get out and ski and know that this is going to get you out the door a bit more?
I think both. And in the groups that I've coached in the past, I like to, the first lesson or two, ask them what their goal is, because I'd like to get a sense of, do you want to just be fit and ski with people, or are you aiming to do the tour or learn how to V2, which is, you know, a skate technique, kind of just assess where everybody is. But most of the time people have an idea of what they'd like to get out of a program.
Uh-huh. So you don't feel like you have a typical skier?
Typically, I would say most of them want to improve their fitness, and skiing is hard, and most of them want to be better at it. That's usually what they say. We want to be better so that we're not huffing and puffing up the hills, which, you know, skiing is tough. You're going to huff and puff, but you can use a little less energy getting up those hills if you work on technique.
Well, I worked with the APU program for several years, and I found that by the end of the season, I'd be going up those hills, and I'd get to the top, and I'd say, whoa, that's new. You know, I'm up here, and I feel great, and I just skied right up the hill because really working out, you know, and working on technique all winter long and really concentrating on it. And that's kind of your goal, right, Greta? I mean, you're sort of not expecting your master skiers to be winning these races, although some of them might, I guess.
Yeah, we have a really broad range. So we have people that have, you know, are like maybe from an athletic background or maybe not, and have gotten into skiing and are at the point where they've skied and they're not improving on their own anymore and want to come to improve. And then we have people that are really wanting to race and do well, maybe in their age group in the tour. We have a few that go down to Minnesota to do the Berkey Biner race every year and want to be competitive in their age group.
It's a huge race with like 10,000 people or something, right?
Yeah, I think it's the biggest one in the country for sure, and maybe one of the biggest tours in the world. And it's basically a Tour of Anchorage, but with a lot more participants.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you are, I mentioned that you won the tour in 2012. You're an Anchorage kid?
I did. I grew up in Anchorage. Kincaid Park was kind of my babysitter growing up, so I spent a lot of time out there. Saw Sarah a lot on the trails when I was young. So, you know, Anchorage is a great place to be a skier because we have so many trails and such a strong ski community, and it's a really welcoming community as well. So there's lots of coaches and lots of people that, you know, have gotten a lot out of skiing and want to give back and share it with other people.
So APU is famous because we have these APU skiers who go to the Olympics, who ski the international tours, and are some of the best skiers in the country. But that's not what you're doing. That's sort of a different segment of the club, right?
Different, but definitely connected. We have 250 in our program between our youngest skier, who is 11, and our oldest skier, who is 84.
Oh, is that?
And you hear about five of them in the paper a lot. But for every five you hear about, you know, there's what that would be 2.5 mm-hmm. that you don't.
Yeah. So
way more than 2.5 actually, but.
So, you've got a sort of a junior program where you're developing skiers to start to ski sort of the high school races and sort of work up. And some of those will become, you know, real competitors and some are just doing it for fun.
Yeah, you know, we hope that everyone gets something out of the program. It's a great way to grow up because you're busy as a kid. It's really empowering to be, like, young and strong and learn how your body works and how to be healthy. It's a really great peer group. By far, all the kids I've worked with, and of course I'm biased having grown up skiing, but it is a really, really great group of well-behaved, very positive, welcoming, kind kids. And one of my favorite things is
And healthy.
One of my favorite things is that when we don't have practices in the summers and stuff, I never see like one or two of our young guys out together. It's always like three or four of them hanging out outside of practice. And so I really like that they, you know, they gel enough at practice, even going to different schools, that they have this really strong sense of being part of like this big community. And then also like this really great peer group of people they get together and do fun stuff with.
Yeah, I want to talk more about that, about the community aspect and the way that being involved in ski racing, even if you're a back of the pack guy like me, is really fun way to have a group of, you know, have a social connection, and your training group can become a really good group of friends. True for other sports too, but it seems to be more for Nordic skiing than most because the nature of the activity is kind of extended time and numerous meetings, whereas you know, some sports you don't really have that group aspect of it as much. So we're going to talk about that later in the show, but I want to get into talking about the Tour of Anchorage. We're broadcasting in January. The tour comes up in March. Not too much more time to get ready. If you're at Greta's level, it's like it's way too late. You should have been getting ready back in June. But for the rest of us, let's talk about what you need to be thinking about if you think, oh, maybe this is the year that I'm going to do the tour and I want to finish it. I don't want to sort of like take too many rests. I want to, you know, feel strong and have a good time. And my guests are Sarah Miller with the Alaska Nordic Masters and Greta Anderson with APU. So, Sarah, is this a common thing for skiers in your program to say, wow, how do I get ready for the tour this year? What do I need to be doing?
Yeah, exactly. And our second session starts in January, so it's definitely not too late to start thinking about it in January. The biggest thing is to kind of assess where you are starting out, like where is your, you know, true fitness level and make sure that you're healthy. And then the biggest thing is to make a goal. Do you want to do the 40K? Do you want to try the 50K? Do you want to, have as few breaks as possible? Or do you want to do it with the best technique you can? And then once you have that goal, the biggest thing I think that would help is join a group. And there's tons in town.
And on the topic of goals, do you think time goals are a good way to go? Because I've often heard people say, well, you can't predict what the snow is going to be like.
Exactly. I mean, there's some years that I did it a few years ago where there had been a big dust storm. And so the snow was like sandpaper. I mean, so it was just super slow. So time goals, people didn't get what they had hoped. Then last year, it ended up being actually, well, shorter and pretty fast conditions. So everybody, you know, had best times. So I would say more, you can always make time goals, especially if you've done it in the past. But I think the bigger goal is more of a general goal. I want to finish this race. I want to be in the top third or I don't want to be last or, you know, things like that. But just in general, more broad general goals. Mm-hmm.
But you measure yourself against the field. And I found having done this for a few years that you start to have some buddies that you meet skiing. Mm-hmm. And so you think, oh, I beat Matt this
benchmarks.
Year.
Benchmarks. Oh, yeah,
darn it.
Exactly.
You know, Glenn beat me this year.
Right.
And Matt and Glenn, you know who you are.
Right.
And, so you, and even though you're still like way at the back, you still have somebody you're racing.
Exactly.
Against.
It makes it more fun to have goals. I mean, to have little even goals like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how, I mean, we've had marathon coaches on the show talking about, how often you need to be training and how hard you need to be training. For different, you know, for like one level is just being able to complete the race and feel good, or at least reasonably good. Nobody feels good at the end, really. And then the next level is sort of to compete because you want to really improve your ability. What's sort of the basic level in terms, as you think of it, in terms of getting ready for the tour? How many days a week should you be skiing?
I think the basic level to be, safe and not just be miserable struggling through the whole race would be a good, like, if you can ski 3 times a week within some cross training days, if you don't have time to make it out to the trails, or if the conditions stay like they are. But I think 3 days a week, including a long ski in there, and kind of that long ski would get gradually longer as you progress through the training plan.
So let's define long.
If you could, I mean, start at an hour solid and then move to like an hour and a half and maybe even a 2 hour ski probably for that kind of beginner skier, I think would be plenty. And then a couple other, like 2 more times, maybe 3 more times if you have time to get out there, at least for an hour each time, working on technique or hills or, you know, specific things.
So if you're running a marathon, they say, you know, don't get to race day without having run some 20-mile weekends because, you know, you have no sense of it. And, you'll try to do a 16-mile, 20-mile, you know, once a week run for a while, so you're sort of building up that endurance. If you're doing the 50K tour, you're not going to, unless you're a really good skier, you're not going to finish under 3 hours, probably closer to 4, right? So do you sort of advise, hey, get out there on the weekend and do a 3-hour ski, or is that more than most people can handle?
Again, depending on the level, if you're kind of the upper end of the recreational scale, for sure, get out there and try to do that 4-hour ski just to see what it would feel like, what nutrition you're going to need, how hydrated you're going to be, your clothing that you're going to wear, things like that, for sure. I like to maybe not, I feel like a lot of people get intimidated if they think that they have to get to a 3-hour ski before the actual race, because during the race, you know, that adrenaline kicks in a little bit, so you do have that extra little boost. And so to help those people that might be on the fence about doing it, I say, you know, 2 to 2.5 hours, if they are getting into it, a 3-hour ski would be great. But I like to get more people out there and then they'll do the race and be like, wow, I can do that. And then the following year, they can kind of bump it up a little bit.
And you don't have to start with the 50, and you shouldn't. So you can start with the 25, and then that
feels good,
move
up to
the 40. So Greta, at the higher level, not necessarily the elite level, but the people who are pretty serious, they've already been training for a while for the tour. We're talking in January now. They've been at it for a while.
Generally, yeah. Generally speaking, yes. But certainly, you know, I think 8 weeks is enough time to prepare if you buckle down and are ready to put in, you know, 5 or 6 days a week. And like Sarah was saying, the really good quality, you know, 1 or 2 longer skis each week.
And you guys aren't just skiing. You're also involving intervals and weight training and the whole thing. So what is sort of the whole picture of what you think of for, you know, maybe it's somebody like me who's 50 years old, but just really wants to be as competitive as possible?
You know, one of the things that I like to incorporate is strength training. So maybe 1 day in the gym a week. I know with our program, we do that. We have an interval day that we do together as a group, and then a technique-focused distance day. And so that one has, you know, maybe a little more talking than a session on your own would. And then, you know, kind of we recommend the distance sessions on people's own. But generally, our skiers getting ready for the tour are doing at least 1 longer ski a week. And that, like Sarah said, that 2, 2.5, 3 hour range, similar to marathon racing, you're going to get a little boost on race day. So, you know, if you're half an hour short of what you would be skiing, or maybe even an hour, if you're comfortable with a 2 hour ski or a 2.5 hour ski and it's going to take you 3.5 hours, you can definitely get through it on race day. Usually without too much of a problem.
And there's this issue where you're trying to build up endurance in your body, right? And I'm not exactly sure how that works, but it does seem to be the case that if you've done distance and not necessarily really fast and have done that over a consistent time period, then you're going to consistently be much better in these endurance events. True?
Generally, yeah. You know, the more that you're outside, the more that you're, you know, just moving along, the more efficient your body's going to get at doing that. So it's going to be more comfortable at that baseline rate, and then have more energy when you get your heart rate up or the intensity comes up in like a race situation.
Mm-hmm. And as a coach, how do you, I mean, you're working with different people at different levels. It's just sort of letting people know, okay, ski as fast as you want to ski, or how do you work at when you're got different people who want to do the tour, but you know that somebody's going to be doing it in three, you know, do the whole 50K in 2:45, and another is going to be doing it in 4 hours. How do you sort of coach that variation?
So whenever somebody comes to us, I look at it as, you know, it's not an evaluation of how good of a skier they are or how skilled they are. It's always really objective evaluation that I try to make is where they're at as far as, you know, their aptitude and what they know so far. And then always, what can we learn from there? Like, what's the thing, what's the one thing we can focus on that will improve them most? And so that's on a really individual basis. And that's the fun in coaching. Maybe you have five different people that day, but you have each of them working on a slight variation of something. Everybody wants to improve, whether they're, you know, winning overall World Cup globes, or they're just getting into skiing and they want to like ski, you know, under 4 hours for the 25K. And so always looking at where we're at and where we want to be, even if, you know, even if the goal is to be a better skier, loosely define that, and or to, you know, get through the tour and have it be pleasant feeling the whole time. That's a skill in itself. So always, you know, like objectively evaluating, like, how do we meet that goal? And for everybody, that's a little bit different. But definitely, I think each day, if you go on the trail and you improve one thing, then that's a good day.
Yeah. All right. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about going the distance in Nordic skiing, building up that ability to join some of these endurance events. And in the studio, Sarah Miller from Alaska Nordic Masters and Greta Anderson from the APU Masters coach. And in a moment, we're going to add another guest. Hey, stick with us. You'll find out who it is, and it's somebody you've already heard of. But first, we're going to take a quick break to hear more about Anchorage resident and Nordic Olympian skier Holly Brooks. 5 years ago, some people might have called Brooks' Sochi dreams a long shot. APRN reporter Annie Feit filed this story last winter on the Olympic skier's unconventional path to Sochi.
On a frigid November day at Hatcher Pass, Holly Brooks glides up to a start line.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go!
This race is just a practice with her Alaska Pacific University teammates. It's a chance for Brooks to test her skills before heading to Europe for the busy World Cup season. Then it will be on to Sochi for the Olympics in February. Brooks is now a seasoned member of the U.S. ski team, but a little more than 4 years ago, she was on the sidelines. On July 4th, 2009, that all changed.
It was actually this really awkward and odd epiphany.
Brooks was competing in Mount Marathon in Seward. She was safely in the lead when she collapsed a few tantalizing blocks from the finish line with extreme dehydration. On a hospital bed covered in dirt and bloody, she couldn't stop thinking about the thrill of the competition.
And just how close I came to winning. It's like it flipped this switch in my mind and my body. And I was laying in the emergency room and I said to myself, I didn't tell anyone, I want to go to the Olympics.
It was an improbable goal. At the time, Brooks was 27, at least a decade older than most cross-country skiers who set their sights on the Olympics. Brooks had done well in the Tour of Anchorage and the Birkebeiner ski race in Wisconsin, but had zero international experience. The games in Vancouver were just 7 months away.
You know, there were a lot of people that told me, oh, with your background, you can never do this, or you're too old, the U.S. ski team will never nominate you. You know, you're past your prime.
But Brooks believed she had a shot, and so did many of the athletes she coached.
I knew Holly was fast.
Don Herring skied for Brooks in high school and in college. He says when the team was training, Coach Brooks was always right there with them.
And it's not like she would stand there on the side of the trail and tell you where to go. She would go ski with you the whole time, and if you did a hard interval set, she might do the whole thing with you. And then, you know, you go home and rest, and meanwhile, Holly has another session to do, and I would assume she did the same thing with them, too.
Brooks pursued her dream with reckless abandon, as she puts it, and it paid off. In 2010, she eked her way onto the Olympic squad. Looking back, Brooks says she can't exactly recommend her unusual path to other skiers, but she says her background gives her something many of her younger competitors lack, perspective.
I think everyone has desire, everyone has motivation, but I've done a lot of other things in my life, and I'm really happy to be doing this here and now. And, you know, I am the oldest one on the team. I know that I don't have 10 more years in my career. So there's a certain amount of, I know I hesitate to call it urgency, but I'm really excited for what's to come.
Let's go, Holly!
Back at Hatcher Pass, Brooks is rounding the last corner of the race course, eyeing the finish line.
Up, 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 up!
This race may just be for practice, but Brooks doesn't hold anything back. She wins by 3 seconds and finishes exhausted, but with a huge smile on her face. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. It's Outdoor Explorer, and I'm your host, Charles Wolforth, and today we're talking about long-distance Nordic skiing. Skiing for citizens, not just for elite skiers, how you can get involved in some of the really fun races that we do in Anchorage that and really impress your relatives from outside when you say, oh yeah, I completed a 40K race, and they'll think, oh my gosh, what's happened? You know, I thought he was a couch potato, and now he's skiing 40 kilometers. Well, actually, you can do it, and it does take some work. But it's a really big part of the Anchorage experience. And we have had another guest join us, another coach from APU. We also have with us Sarah Miller from Alaska Nordic Masters and Greta Anderson from APU. Eric Strabel is a coach at APU and Mount Marathon running champ, won the Mount Marathon race in 2011, 13 and 14, and set the record on Mount Marathon in 2013, which was extraordinary accomplishment, a record that has stood for many, many years. Thanks for being with us, Eric.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, and what level are you coaching now at APU?
Right now, I'm coaching juniors. The last 6 years or so, I've coached the elite team, the university team, as well as the junior team at APU.
Okay. And what age level is that, the junior team?
The high school age group.
Okay. And they have, and we have a lot of the best high school skiers in the country here in Anchorage, don't we?
We do. We do. We have quite a few.
And they they work out with you, and then they also work out like 3 or 4 hours a day with their high school team. Like,
right?
Do they
right.
do anything else?
Sometimes they can sleep.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I thought it'd be fun in this segment to talk a little bit about sort of the high end training and what it takes to really be a skier who's competitive and is actually going to win. And not that we expect sort of listeners to do that, but sometimes it's inspiring just to hear about what a really tough training program is like. You were sort of in the money for the Tour of Anchorage, and I know mountain running is your main racing thing instead of skiing, but what is a training regime for an elite athlete who's doing these endurance events?
Maybe the most significant difference is the number of times that an athlete is going out there every week and training, putting in those sessions. You know, maybe a casual athlete is more of a weekend warrior, and maybe on a weekday, a couple weekdays a week, they can get out there and go for a ski or something. But to be an elite athlete really takes a lot of sacrifice every day, and it takes that system of being out there frequently, and it takes that extra motivation that, oh, today I just don't feel into it. Well, that's the difference right there. Mm-hmm. That someone who has very specific goals and wants to, you know, compete to win, you know, gets that extra motivation to get out there when they don't want to be out there.
Doesn't matter if you want to or not, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Although if you didn't enjoy it, I would think that you wouldn't. I mean, on some level, you have to enjoy it, right?
Right.
And I know I often feel like, I really don't feel like working out today, but I know that once I'm out there and I've been doing it for 15 minutes, that good feeling is going to come back.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm.
Is that usually the case for you? I mean, I've seen you out running up in the Chugach Mountains, and you must put on an incredible number of hours. Does it still give you sort of pleasure and fulfillment in all those hours of training, even though there's so many of them?
It does, absolutely. Yeah, and just like you say, the hardest part is getting out the door. And once you start moving and getting the blood flowing, you get past the first hill, then it's downhill from there, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah. So when you're actually training at your peak of you know, putting in the most hours, how many hours a week would you be actually skiing or running?
During, I guess, the winter, for example, with coaching sessions on snow and my own running, if I can squeeze it in, I might be out there moving for 4 or 5 hours a day.
Every day of the week?
No, not every day, but maybe an average of, you know, three.
Mm-hmm. Because I've also heard that it's important to take some time off.
Yes, it is important to rest the body and let it recover and do something else for sure.
Yeah. The other factor is intensity, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you will do the 4 or 5 hours, and you're actually working pretty hard.
You know, sometimes I've 33 years now, and I think I'm just finally learning how to train.
Uh-huh.
And I'm, you know, if there's one thing I've learned is that it really takes a variety of intensities to cycle through almost every day, and especially every week. You know, they have 3 or 4 or 5 different paces that you touch on frequently, and it kind of keeps the body guessing instead of keeping it locked in one gear, and you get really flat. You know, I think there's probably at least 4 different speeds that I routinely try to touch on every single week.
Interesting.
And I think everyone can benefit from that.
Do you do that with the high school kids? I mean, I'm sure that we do. High school boys especially just want to ski as fast as possible and beat their buddies.
They do. Yeah. They do. Yeah, it almost takes a daily reminder, and usually that doesn't work still, that the warm-ups often become some of the fastest skiing that they do that day.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've experienced that myself, and should be mature enough not to do that. But that you're supposed to be warming up, and instead you're like, you're racing your warm up partners.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, do you do that? Do you have that, Sarah? When you're working with skiers who are obviously not like these elite skiers, is it the same deal? Like you want to vary the intensity over the week?
For sure. Again, because at master's level, they just come in with so many different. Where they're the starting points, I guess. And so, you have the skiers that are aiming for, you know, certain goals in the tour or the races. And so we, like Greta was saying earlier, kind of tailor each workout to each skier. So they'll be doing a little faster, a little longer intensity, maybe some more rest. And then the beginners are more, we tend to make intervals as like relay races or kind of incorporate that speed, that hard skiing into more kind of a relaxed atmosphere and not the, you know, 4 minutes of level 4, you know, that kind of technical jargon that might intimidate some people.
Yeah, let's do some definition because a lot of listeners probably don't know the word interval.
Yeah, so interval, I guess, is just, painful. Help me out here. Painful, yeah. I mean, you're pushing the limits to, you know, improve your VO max or, you know.
So you're just going as fast as you can for a short distance.
Yeah, and then there's different levels with the intervals. Like Eric was saying, you know, there's like anaerobic, or, you know, like anaerobic threshold levels, which I don't want to get too specific.
So that's
but,
when
you know,
you're going fast enough so that you're not like replenishing the oxygen.
Exactly.
In your
so it's like you'd think about it like a longer race. So like that kind of a race pace interval versus like a sprint race where how fast, yes, what's your maximum output that you can possibly do? And that would be like a shorter interval. So it can get very technical, but in my experience is just, you know, keep it simple. But that's why finding a group or a training partner that might know so that they can kind of teach you all this stuff.
Well, this is one of the things about working with a group is that you're probably never going to know that stuff unless you did a lot of it in high school. You're not
exactly
going to know how to do it.
Exactly. And so a lot of people come to me and they're like, how do you even start? What's a training plan? Like, I have no idea how many distance days you do, what intervals you do. And so that's why you don't have to join a group. You can teach yourself by trial and error to kind of like Eric was saying, it took him 33 years to figure out how to train correctly. But joining a program with experienced coaches is just so much more helpful. You just kind of come, learn, do what they tell you, ask questions, and you get so much out of a program.
Yeah, I don't think it's even that easy to learn it from a book at all. I think you actually need to be sort of get the feel for what these different paces are all about and how do you feel when you're doing a certain pace and sort of you really want to figure out what your right pace is.
Mm-hmm.
That brings us to another topic though, which is talent, right? I mean, you could train all you want, and if you don't have that sort of, if you're not given that genetically, given a body that's going to get you up to a high level, you're always going to, you know, and you just have to be happy with what you can accomplish. I mean, Sarah, what is your feeling about talent and about when you can recognize You skied in college. You were competitive.
Yep.
But you were saying you hadn't won any of our local races. So was that about not making that a goal, or was that about something about your body and how far you could go with it?
I think that was more about actually just burning out. I was so serious in high school and had so many, you know, goals, and I just totally burnt out and then kind of decided to do the other side for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, coaching in high school and coaching masters, you get a sense of, I mean, there are just some people that are kind of blessed with more athletic ability or maybe even just physiology, you know, they just have a higher VO max or whatnot. But I sometimes look at those skiers or runners that are the middle of the pack, kind of maybe not so talented, and they put in, I mean, you can still improve at every level. And that's the cool thing, is that you take everybody's set, kind of, not set, but everybody's starting point, and everybody can improve, whether it's the back of the packer to like the highest skier, like the Olympian. So, but there definitely is that as a piece to play, kind of that overall talent. And more than that, kind of that killer instinct. Like, does the person, I have athletes that I'm sure you guys do that are very talented, but if they don't have that drive or that dedication to that training, uh-huh. it doesn't, you have to have all the pieces.
I'll weigh in on that. Going off of what Sarah said, like hard work is like that ability to work hard and to learn a new skill is a talent in itself.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, like you see skiers that have that persistence or people, and they do really well, maybe not right away. But that in itself is a skill that you look at as a huge, you know, we're starting to look at more components of sport, like mental toughness and grit. And this idea that, you know, like maybe it's not just athletic ability. There's a lot more in that mix.
It's how much you care. And people will talk about, you know, this person has a lot of mental toughness, like you're saying, as if you just push harder, you'll win the race. But actually, the mental toughness comes during the training, right?
Well, and sometimes it's being able to take a step back and rest, or to not go so hard in your warm up with a bunch of teenage boys.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'd like to touch on talent a little bit. And there was a great book written by Daniel Coyle, I believe, called The Talent Code. And he writes a lot about how talent in itself is maybe not quite well understood at this point. And there is this myelin, you know, sheath in the cell, you know, structure that the human beings are very, very capable of learning new skills, better than almost any other organism in the world. And that's our greatest talent, the ability to learn.
There's an interesting book called... I should have it written down. It's by Bill McKibben, I believe, and it's a Nordic skiing book about how it's. Is this ring any bells with you guys? He took a year when he decided he was going to be a competitive skier, and he comes to the conclusion that he doesn't have the sort of the pipes. He doesn't have the genes to get to the very top, and I sort of buy that, but I also think that you know, do we know that he really pushed far enough to find out, right? Because you'd really have to be prepared, as Eric is saying, to put in many hours a day before you'd really find out what you're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And very few of us will ever have the time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Long Distance, that's it. Long Distance, Testing the Limits of Body and Spirit by Bill McKibben. And it's quite a good book. Have any of you guys read it?
No, but I will now.
No, yeah. Not.
I don't even know if it's still in print. A friend gave it to me. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about distance Nordic skiing. Something that really anybody can get into, but it does take some effort and going out there and putting in some hours. Sarah Miller's with me with the Alaska Nordic Masters. Eric Strabel from APU, he's coaching the juniors, and he's a multi-year Mount Marathon champion. Greta Anderson trains with Masters at APU and was a winner of the Tour of Anchorage in 2012. One of the things about Nordic skiing that makes it really appealing as you get older is that you can always get better. And as a runner, I know that you get to a certain age and you sort of start getting worse. You guys, none of you guys have gotten this point yet, but you sort of like, oh, you're never going to reach that personal best again. You're on the downhill slide just simply because of the way the world is. But in skiing, there's so much to the technique of skiing that you can always improve a little bit. May not go faster, but you can always be a better skier. And I don't know, maybe start with you, Sarah. What do you do to sort of develop that good technique and get, I mean, can you just look at a skier and see what's wrong with what they're doing and help them improve?
Yeah, I mean, after years of coaching, I think we've all seen enough video and watched ski races that we kind of know what people are doing right and then what needs to be corrected in some people. And what I find when I coach, I really like to incorporate video. Because, you know, in your mind's eye, you're doing exactly what the coach is saying, or you think you look a certain way. And then when you actually see yourself on film, I think that's just such a valuable tool to actually, you know, what is it when we're saying keep your hips forward? Like, I am keeping my hips forward, but when you actually see that you're not doing that, uh-huh. it helps a lot because, so I really like to use video. And again, every person's different. And in skiing, there's so many different pieces that gets overwhelming too. So with my master's, you know, focus on one thing at a time. Like Greta was saying, you know, today we're going to focus on legs, and here's what we're going to focus on, the ankle flexion. I mean, just like kind of pick one thing and go from there. Because if you're like, you need to do this, 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 and then the next thing you know, that person just can't even move because right. they're just trying to think about so many things.
Yeah. And there's a lot, the entire body is involved, right? So you've got to sort of make a lot of adjustments. Greta, do you feel when you look at a skier, can you sort of see what level they're at, you know, in terms of, well, they really haven't mastered V2 or they really can't stay on one ski for very long, and that you need to put all these pieces together? Is sort of, or how do you view a skier when you're thinking about what, figuring out what level they're at?
I'll start this by saying that I don't ski around on the trails judging people skiing unless I'm prompted to pay attention to them as one of my athletes generally. But, you know, so I'm not looking for things people are doing wrong. And there's no wrong way to ski. There's more efficient ways to ski. And so, yeah, there are things that, you know, as a coach and a trainer, like you start to look for and you see, you know, maybe somebody's doing, you know, something goofy with their hands. And it's a timing thing and not a strength thing. Or, you know, at the master's level, we have people, you know, that maybe have a bad ankle or a bad knee, or they're protecting a shoulder that's been injured. And so that's something that we take into consideration when we're looking at their technique. But certainly, like, you know, the more experience we have, like Sarah said, with watching video, like the group that Eric Strabel works with, watching the junior ski, and especially as they grow, their technique changes for a little while and sometimes gets really goofy and then gets a lot better. You know, we're always watching for those things. And, okay, how can we be a little bit more efficient or use a little less energy? And just like walking or running, everyone has their own different style, and everything works different for somebody. That's one of the things I really like about skiing is, you know, you look at an NBA team and there's definitely a body type you see more often than not. Mm-hmm. When you watch the World Cup, like the ladies' field, for example, you do see a lot of really strong shoulders and strong legs, but you also see, you know, ladies who are 5'4" and you see ladies who are 6'2" competing together. And that's pretty fun. You know, there's not one body type for skiing at any level. Different body types, different things are going to work for, but that's certainly something that, like, as a coach, keeps the job challenging and fun. And as an athlete is, you know, really affirming to know that, hey, there's something that works for me that's really mm-hmm. efficient that maybe isn't going to work for my best ski buddy, my favorite person to ski with. Maybe they're the opposite, you know, but mm-hmm. That is kind of a fun thing yeah. about skiing.
Well, and I found as, you know, I've been skiing since I was a little kid, and but then sort of only really got lessons or advice as a middle-aged person. Really hard to get rid of the bad habits. But when you do, you suddenly go, wow, I am so much faster. This is so much easier. You know, when you sort of learn to get your body in the right position going up a hill, or when you learn to do that V2 technique, which is so efficient on the flat, and you suddenly, you know, you feel like you're flying along. And I wonder, Eric, or anybody who wants to jump in on this, when you're... Are there certain skills that are sort of quantum leap skills for someone who wants to do the tour that's going to make them like enjoy it more, be a much better skier, that you're taking a big jump? I don't know if like learning to be a V2 skier where you're skating and you're pulling on both sides, if that's maybe one of them, or any other things you would want to throw in that people might want to master in order to sort of make the next leap.
You know, I think there are, but I think it's highly individual.
Mm-hmm.
I've sat down many times with the intention of, okay, I'm going to start writing a manual for ski training.
Oh, yeah.
And I get to about 10 minutes in and I realize this is impossible. I don't know who's going to read this. And where that person is coming from is so important, that coaching really is a dialogue between, you know, at least two different people. And it brings in more importance of being a member of a group so that the coach gets to know you and learns about you and knows what you need to hear to develop and make that quantum development. So it might be, you know, something about becoming better at V2ing, or it might be something where focusing on the V1 is better. We don't really know until the person with an expertise meets that person with the need,
yeah.
and they get to know each other.
Yeah, a good point. And I also had a revelation when Dylan Watts told me how to double pull as a classic skier, which I'd been doing since I was 5 years old. And suddenly, oh my gosh, I can't believe what's happening. I'm going so much faster. So we're going to take another break, and we're talking about Nordic skiing and learning to be a distance skier and maybe getting ready for the tour of Anchorage. In the next segment, let's talk about the different groups in town and how somebody might make a choice of what group they might want to join in order to train and learn to be a better skier. There's four different choices, so pretty unique town we have in Anchorage with all these ski trails and all these opportunities for groups that you can get involved with. And it is still early enough in the winter for listeners to actually train for some of these longer Nordic skiing events on the horizon. The Outdoor Explorer calendar is back now with a rundown of what's coming up on the schedule.
Now is the time to start training for the Tour of Anchorage, which happens this year on Sunday, March 8th. Choose from 25, 40, or 50-kilometer routes across the city's award-winning network of trails. In its 27th year, the race draws participants from across the U.S. and from across the world. It's put on by the Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage, which offers training days specifically for skiers looking to step up their game with this event. For more information on the Tour of Anchorage, visit anchoragenordicski.com. Later in March, the 14th annual Usyk Classic gets rolling in Talkeetna. It's hard to say whether this race is more famous for the costume skiers wear or for the after party. Classic cross-country skiers can choose from 25 or 50-kilometer routes, and the course changes each year, so get ready for some new scenery if you've done this one before. The race happens on March 21st at high noon. For more information on the Usyk Classic, visit DenaliNordicSkiClub.org. Tired of throwing elbows with other skiers? If you're willing to ski a little longer, there's a growing circuit of long-distance races in Alaska that also welcome competitors of other disciplines, like biking and trail running. The Homer Epic 100K has bikers, skiers, and runners logging 62 miles of forward motion on some of the Kenai's most remote trails. The race happens March 21st, the same day as the Usyk Classic this year. For entry requirements and more information on the race, check out KachemakNordicSkiClub.org. If you like to ski with your canine buddies, the Tanana River Challenge might be for you. The race is open to skiers, ski jorers, and bikers. The course runs 47 miles from Nenana to Fairbanks. The race happens on Saturday, March 14th this year. For more information, check out TananaRiverChallenge.org. And lastly, the White Mountains 100 takes racers through the heart of interior Alaska. Skiers, bikers, and runners start in Fairbanks and tick off 100 miles as they make their way through the White Mountains National Recreation Area. The event happens on March 29th this year. For more information, it's easiest just to Google White Mountains 100. That's it for the Nordic Distance edition of this Outdoor Explorer calendar. You can find links to all these events and more on our website at OutdoorExplorer.org. For Outdoor Explorer, I'm Monica Gokey.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and today we're talking about long-distance cross-country skiing. Maybe you just have normally skied Sunday afternoons, three or four weekends a year, and you don't think you'd ever be in a ski race. Well, maybe this is the year for you to step it up a notch, become a more accomplished skier, build your fitness, get your body in shape, and do an event like the Tour of Anchorage, the 25, 40, or 50K, which comes up at the beginning of March. We have three coaches in the studio to talk about this and how it could be applicable to any level of athlete. Greta Anderson is a coach with APU, coaching the Masters group, and a 2012 Tour of Anchorage winner. Eric Strable has won the Mount Marathon race three times and coaches juniors at APU and has been a coach there for quite a while. And Sarah Miller is a coach with the Alaska Nordic Masters group. And Sarah, there's even opportunities for people who've never skied before. Tell us, you know, if there's a listener out there thinking, oh, this is inapplicable to me. I don't know how to ski. What are the opportunities for adults to become skiers in Anchorage?
Yeah, we have so many. When I moved back to town, I was a coach for the municipality, the Muni Masters program, and we'd get a lot of imports to Anchorage who just moved here for jobs or an adventure, and they thought, why not ski? And this is the best place in the country to do so. And so, you know, we have the Muni Masters, and we're going to get into this, and then the clubs in town, and then the Nordic Ski Club actually has their own program lessons and coaches as well. So there's about five great options in town.
We all call it the Nordic Ski Club, but
I know maybe Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. Right. Yes, yes.
And we're going to have links to all of the everything we're going to talk about now about the different groups you can join. You'll find links on the webpage. You go to alaskapublic.org or outdoorexplorer.org, and you'll find a page for Nordic Going the Distance, and just click and there'll be links to all these different groups you could join. So I'm sorry to interrupt you, Sarah, but so the entry level is there.
Yes, for sure. And we keep talking about having a coach or a program is very important. And some people, I don't want people to think that they're not at that level out there, because there are beginning coaches, there's beginning programs, there's intermediate, advanced. It's for everybody. And really, now is the time. You live in Alaska. That's what we do. Everybody should get outside in the wintertime. It helps pass the time, get through the darkness, get you outside. So
yeah, I've been out and I've been extolling how much I enjoy being in a group to someone, and they'll say, well, I'm going to join a master's program as soon as I get to be good enough. I'm not quite good enough now.
Right. Right.
But that doesn't really make any sense.
Just do it.
So tell me about the group you coach. The Anchorage Nordic Masters.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I mean, if you sort of made a graph of the level of sort of intensity of the different masters groups in town, this would be one of the more easygoing groups, right?
Yes, we have everybody from, like I said, the first time skiers to the intermediate and advanced skiers, and then a training program also. The thing with Alaska Nordic Masters is it's not year-round right now. We just have the winter sessions. So we have an early session in November and December, and then the January through March session, the bulk of it. And it's all levels and abilities, but it is a little bit more flexible and, like I said, just a short-term winter program.
So how many days a week do you have your sessions, and how long do the sessions last?
Yeah, there are four sessions offered a week, Monday, Wednesday nights, Wednesday mornings, and Fridays at noon. So there's lots of different options for people, and we do a punch card system where you can, if you're normally Monday, Wednesday, but you miss it, you can come on Friday instead. So it's pretty flexible in that regard as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we have coaches for all abilities.
Okay. Greta, the APU program is a little bit more... You've got weight training, and I don't do weight training.
We do,
Sarah?
Circuits occasionally.
You do? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I recall, the APU program, you've got weights, you've got intervals, and you've got sort of technique on three different days of the week. Mm-hmm. Tell us about how you structure your program.
So we're a year-round program. We do cross training in the summer until we have snow, and then we're on skis 2 days a week. But we do keep up the strength training 1 day a week because it is so important for both like quality of movement and also. Drills that we do in the gym, and then we have skiing the other 2 days a week, and generally people ski, you know, outside of that, but not always. We definitely have the group swells up in the winter when skiing gets good. I don't blame people at all for only wanting to ski when the snow conditions are great. So we have a noon and evening option, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. Noon is basically 12:15 to 1:45, so noon to 2, and then
so
the
hour
evening,
and a half each session.
Mm-hmm. And then evening session is 6:30 to 8.
6 hours. Yeah. So we see you guys out there all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have the same time.
We have the same time, and Muni Masters is similar. So it's like Grand Central Station at Kincaid when it's like
that's a little party.
It's like we have to wear like armbands because people get lost and go with a different group by accident.
Follow the wrong group.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, yeah, there's a lot of groups out there on snow. I know Winter Stars is on the same schedule that we are as far as noon and evening groups go as well. So,
and you've done Winter Stars as a skier.
For 6 years as a junior. And then I came and worked with Strabel at APU.
So you're a traitor.
So I, yes, I went from red to blue. And so I feel purple at heart sometimes. So Winter Stars has a noon option that's very drill oriented and a little more relaxed. And then they have an evening group as well. And I believe that's 5 days a week, 4 to 5 days a week. Their evening group is probably the most intense one in the city. Those guys are, for the most part, pretty self-sufficient and dialed. And Jan Baran runs that program and has for years, very consistent.
And pretty race oriented, right?
Very race oriented. That's a group of, we call them master blasters. They like to go hammer every night and, you know, put each other against the boards and kind of push and see who's the best one that day. So
I will say that the noon group for Winter Stars is great. It's a very social group. I mean, they do a lot of technique, but there's a lot of, I don't think it's only women, but there's quite a few women.
Mostly women.
And they have a great time. It's just a lot of fun. They get out there and
so it's not the super competitive,
right? I mean, I'm sure that there are competitive
dudes.
People, but it's more of a
more drill oriented. Lots of technique,
just social time.
Mm-hmm. But back to APU. So yeah, I mean, it's like APU's group is like maybe the broadest range of abilities of the groups that I've seen in town. We have a few like age group guys that are right up there. And really enjoy beating down on the high school kids in the Tour of Anchorage. And then we have, people that just really want to improve their skiing or have just moved up from, like Sarah said, from the States and, love to ski there and want to get to know the trails here and have a really good group of people to train with. What I find with masters at the APU group and generally people that are like masters in general, it's people that like to learn throughout life. So you get this really great group of very interesting, very accomplished people who do a lot of diverse things. And so it's really interesting group to train with and get to know. And
I think so too. And Sarah said something early in the show about masters are people who have time. But in my experience with that APU group is like half of them were doctors and professors and people who
that's
write.
Why they're late to your appointment after lunch.
I guess they're people that can make time.
They're super busy
people.
Yeah. But they're sort of, this is part of what they want to accomplish in life is to be fit and to be good skiers. So, Erica, I mean, one of the things you also hear from beginners or people who are sort of trying to work up in that intermediate level about whether they could get more serious is, oh, I don't have the right equipment or I don't know how to wax. That's the other thing. Like what people think of cross-country skiing is like really, it's like waxing. Mm. It's a waxing sport. Then you could go out and ski a little bit. But it's really not that important. I mean, if you're until you're like at the top level, the didn't seem to me like the equipment is like a make or break thing. What do you think?
Right. Yeah. It's it is a hurdle. However, if you can get over that hurdle, yes, it is, something you can just get past. And then the true athletic ability does shine. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing about equipment I see is that people, they don't have as good enough equipment that they could enjoy the sport with.
Mm-hmm.
If they have a secondhand pair of classic skis or maybe they weren't fit as well and they can't kick the ski, well, they're not going to enjoy skiing. Or if their ski wax is too slow on a race day, they're not going to have fun and they're probably not going to come back. So making it enjoyable to have the equipment that they can enjoy the sport like it can be is the most important component.
Well, I think the fit is so key. And we've talked about this, that, if you go to a ski swap and just buy skis because the price is right, you're probably not going to be too happy.
Right.
But you don't have to have the most expensive skis. You just have to have the ones that have the right flex for your weight and your height and so forth. Talk a little bit about why the flex is so important in classic skiing.
It really is. You're going to shift from having as fast a ski as possible and having all your kick wax lifted off and off the snow in the wax camber and with the flex of the ski. Whereas if you put just a little bit more percentage of your body weight onto that ski, you can connect all your body weight through that kick wax onto the snow. So it's really tricky, and it's something that's hours and thousands of dollars get spent on the World Cup every day on finding the right pair of skis for that person in that condition. So you could spend a ton of resources on it, but you don't have to, though.
Mm-hmm.
You can find a good pair of skis in many of the local shops in Anchorage.
Yeah, and if you go to a shop and get that ski flexed, so mm-hmm. they measure the mm-hmm. flex while you're trying on the ski, then your chances are infinitely greater than just trying
yes.
to eyeball it.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is money well spent.
Mm-hmm. And then in terms of waxing, I mean, in a normal winter in Anchorage, which is something we don't always, like, I don't know if we have anymore, at least you used to be able to get by with two or three waxes for most of the season. And then in a race, you can get advice. There'll be mm-hmm. wax tables or stuff online to tell you what wax to use. But for just training, you don't need to not go out because you're worried about wax.
Right, right. If you have a small kick wax box with you, you can keep in your car with a half dozen different waxes, you'll have something that'll work just fine.
Yeah.
No matter the condition. Yeah. And, you know, if you show up, if you've never been in a ski race before, if you're not a member of a ski race, and if you just show up to the Anchorage, you know, wax bunker and just ask someone who looks like they know what they're doing, they're going to help you.
Yeah.
You know, there's no one there, you know, with any secrets. You know, they're all helping everyone there.
People are excited to show their knowledge on that stuff too. So,
yeah, everybody shares that information. So let's in just the 2 minutes we have left, I think that that is a good segue into what I think is probably the most fun part of this, is at least for somebody my age and my ability, is the social part. You know, you go to these ski races and all those people are there, and if it's a tour of Anchorage, a lot of them will be people that you've sort of been seeing all winter long or been training with, and suddenly we're all together in this huge group. And that makes it really fun. I mean, Sarah, do you have that experience when you're out there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you kind of go to events looking to see your friends. And it's a social event that, yes, you're going to exercise and feel good about yourself. But it's, like Greta said earlier, you know, Alaskans in general are awesome go-getters. And then, you know, you bring the ones that want to learn skiing and really push themselves. And you have just an awesome group of people that are wanting to get outside, get fit. And it's just a really good time. So if you're considering, you know, making the leap to kind of either learn skiing or get better at it or do these races, you definitely should do it.
And the training group itself is going to get you out the door to ski.
Exactly.
And get lose weight or whatever it is your goal is. And then you're going to make a group of friends who mm-hmm. you see outside and sort of have a new circle.
It's such a positive environment. You know, the way I look at it, I see it as so lucky with skiing because it's a part of the day that people set aside special time for and really look forward to. And so it's definitely one of the highlights of their day.
Everyone's in a good mood. Yeah.
Yeah. And you get to share that with a bunch of people who are in the same mindset. It's a pretty special thing.
Yeah. That's something I always found with the group is you see these folks that you see a couple of times a week, check in with them. And then you've had a really bad day at work and you're completely stressed out. And you get on the trail and start skiing really fast, and like all that stress gets blown away, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
That's
kind of
what you're talking about
in
your training runs, right, Eric?
Yeah, yeah. It can turn a, you know, a bad day into a great day, and yeah, there's nothing like physical exercise that mm-hmm. can cheer things up. That no matter how dark the winter gets here.
That's
and on,
right.
on the darkest night, you go to Kincaid or Hilltop, ski a loop with your
yep.
friends or even under the moon, and it yep. is just totally restorative.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, man, you're making me really want to get out there and go skiing. I really want to now. Well, I want to thank all three of my guests. It's been a really fun hour and interesting. Sarah Miller is a coach with the Alaska Nordic Masters group. Eric Strabel, of course, a marathon champ, also an APU coach, and Greta Anderson, APU Masters coach. Thanks all of you for being with me. And if you want to learn more about getting into these races or joining one of these groups, please check out our website at alaskapublic.org. We'll have all that information posted. On next week's show, we're going to take a different tack. We're going to be talking to some adventurers who like to do everything alone, loners out in the wilderness. And we're interviewing them one at a time, of course. Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. Our producer is Monica Gokey. I'm your host, Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.